Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our Patreon supporters, this is your extended ad-free version of the show. And thank you, patrons, including Alex McQuilkin, Adam Binsley, Jeff Skipper, Roz Hanlon, Will Dawson, and everyone joining us now live in the chat as well. Andy, John, Camille, Luke, Nick, Pangolin Sandwich, / my wife. My wife, thank you all for your incredible support. You can access the full-length version of the show and get our exclusive sister show Extra Message by going to patreon.com/UKTech. Two reasons that's significant today. The first is that being episode 203 means that there have been as many text messages as there were Wired UK podcasts while I was still there. I made 203 episodes of the Wired show before I left. We've now, as of this show, made 203 episodes of Text Message, which makes next week very exciting because it'll make it the longest running show ever that I've done anyway. And on Extra Message this week, I went behind the scenes a little bit and talked about the original pitching process for that show and what coming neck and neck with my old show means to me. So that's out now at patreon.com/UKTech. Let's get into some news, Ian. It was a huge news event, of course, this year when the Glastonbury Music Festival was cancelled in response to the current pandemic. But far more significantly, some good music festivals have also been impacted. Chief among them, as I'm sure nobody will contest, is the Download Rock Festival that was due in June. Why is this a tech story, you may rightly wonder, and I'm sure you all are. Well, the festival's organisers have decided to turn the event into an online show for the three main days the actual festival should have taken place. According to the Download website, Download Festival TV will take place via our YouTube. That was a bit of a mistake.
YouTube.
Yes, but you know where I was going with that. Facebook, yes. Twitter, and Instagram channels on the 12th to the 14th of June. So pitch your tent, erect your flags, put up your horns, and get ready to mosh at a socially responsible distance. Now, it said many of the acts that were due to be participating in the actual event will participate with music and interviews and unseen performances, interactive content, stuff like that. And they're encouraging people to pitch up their tents in their gardens instead. Now, before we discuss this with Ian, who I must caveat is probably the person least qualified to praise the merits of a heavy metal music festival, but I just wanted to highlight that surely there is a missed opportunity here to have branded it the Stream Festival rather than Download.
Might be a legal issue. There might already be some streaming music festival.
Fortunately, though, Ian, and I know that this will come as a huge relief to you, August's Bloodstock Festival in Derbyshire is still going ahead. Some of my favourite bands are still going to be there. The Black Dahlia Murder, for example, they've got a new album out this week. They're still going to be there. Ginger, who are from... not sure where they're from. I think Eastern Europe, one of the Eastern European countries, they're still there. Devin Townsend, Behemoth, they're all going to be there. So don't worry, everybody. Bloodstock is still safe for the time being. The question I have, Ian, is what Download is doing, do you think that is a... do you think it's a PR stunt that we're tapping into here? Or do you think that they're, given the pervasiveness of streaming and online communities, actually you can replicate an element of a live experience at home?
Okay, good questions. First question, do you have to pay?
No. That was actually my first question. Yeah, it's going to be streamed for free on these channels. Yeah,
that's good. I mean, they could charge. I don't think people would be too bothered about paying if it was done well, you know, with nice quality and, you know, with some element of, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how these bands are going to get together to perform live. It seems...
I suspect a lot of the stuff that comes out will be pre-recorded, but is exclusive to this stream.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think I to some extent, yes, it is a publicity thing, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think it's a good way of giving people something to look forward to, you know, with us all sort of trapped inside for potentially quite a while to come. You know, something like this just means that people have got a weekend and they can structure everything around it. They can look forward to some hearing some things that they've not heard before, seeing some bands that they love perform. I have nothing but praise for the idea of it, really.
Okay, that's good. That's not what I was expecting you to say. I was expecting you to have one of your, you know, one of your moments, your Morris moments.
I'm more likely to have a moment about an actual festival, because, you know, going and setting up camp in a field and, you know, having to pay a lot of money for the privilege of that is irksome to me. I'm not telling people that they can't do it. I'm perfectly fine with people spending their money as and how they wish. But, you know, I it makes far more sense for me for these things to happen at home than it does in, you know, out in public. Because there's temperatures more easily controlled at home. Also, there's quite a lot of sort of precedent for all sorts of things like this. So do you remember, for example, when Marshmallow did that gig in Fortnite?
I don't know what Marshmallow is.
It's like a DJ kind of producer. I mean, Marshmallow is a sort of a music creator as well as just a DJ.
So also a tasty campsite snack.
Absolutely, very true. Yeah, and his thing is obviously that he wears a suit.
Not obvious.
And the head is a giant marshmallow. I suggest you look into it. He's done a lot of stuff that you have almost certainly heard, even if you haven't attributed it to him himself. So that's one example of doing something like this that was sort of a PR stunt, but kind of interesting and groundbreaking at the same time. You had to be there at a certain time. Obviously, the way they manage it, you can't have every Fortnite player in the same instance. So there must have been some pretty interesting technical challenges about having a performance play out live across multiple server instances of the game, which I think is interesting in itself.
It is, and if I remember rightly, wasn't it Muse that did a live gig in Second Life quite a few years ago?
I believe that you're right. Yes, I seem to remember something about Muse doing something like that as well. I don't think it's particularly unique. I think it's happened a few times over the years, and I'm all for it. Of course. And so that's a good example of the point I was going to make. Actually, it comes down to atmosphere. A lot, obviously, the reason that people don't listen to me and go and have fun at festivals is that it's about a group of largely like-minded people getting together with kind of music that they generally like, and having a lovely time together. It's not just about the music. I think you're going to miss some of that in having it streamed to home. But of course, people will probably do things where they have like Zoom chats with friends and, you know, they're all enjoying it together. It's all part of a communal experience, right? So having
and you're
download
right.
happen at a certain time means that they can all enjoy it together. And that will be as good as we can get right now.
One of the I mean, you've hit on a very important point, which is the social aspect of this. And there is no replicating the kind of social interaction that you get at something like a festival, because in the same way that if you go on a date or a speed date, or you go on a date to a movie, it's giving you a common thing to talk quite a lot about, no matter who you are, where you've come from, what your other interests are.
And you're
going
to meet new people as well. You know, even if you're not out to meet new friends, you're going to have casual interactions with people that will be different and unusual for your life. That's, you know, obviously a big part of the festival experience is having an experience that, you know, changes your outlook.
It's a very valuable one as well. I mean, I'm sure you know this, but when I my friend Brad, when I got married, I had three groomsmen. I had my now brother-in-law. I had you, Ian. I'm sure you remember.
Yes, I do remember.
And I had Brad. And that's what I think the American, is it called an usher, or do we call them ushers and they call them groomsmen?
We call them ushers, they call them groomsmen, yeah.
Okay. Plus Andy, my brother, was my best man. But Brad, I met at Download.
And Brad is amazing. So, and I know Brad now because of you. So this festival has given us both a gift.
So all of that comes back to download. So for something like this, I suppose that's why I find this interesting. There's a personal aspect, but I do like the idea of festivals moving online when there is this huge ability for us to interact in all of these ways that we now can. Something like Eurovision has always been a great event for watching live with people remotely from different houses. But with a festival that's quite specific to a subculture more than anything else, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how that plays out. I fully plan on being involved in it in some form. And I think that's quite nice.
Well, you've got a good sound system. If they're streaming good quality, it'll be a very pleasant experience, I'm sure.
Could well be, yes.
I've never really been a big fan of Eurovision, and the kitschiness of it doesn't really work for me. But I used to sit on, because I had nothing else to do when Eurovision was on often, I would sit in an IRC channel with loads of people from sort of all across Europe, and they'd all talk about it. And it was good fun. Like, that was, for me, by far the best part of the, you know, that thing, was having that experience with other people, you know, taking the mickey, having some laughs, etc. So, yeah, this will be great.
Meanwhile, in news that will surprise nobody but yet still presents a prime opportunity for analysis nonetheless, the BBC reported this week that energy firms have said home energy use is up as much as 30% during the middle of the day as a result of much of the population working and being educated from home. The highest peak is at lunchtime, the BBC wrote, when cooking is added to the power consumption of working from home. But, and this is the bit that intrigued me most, Ian, overall, the UK is actually using less energy because of businesses being closed. In fact, the National Grid has reported that morning and afternoon electricity demand is down by nearly 20%, largely due, it says, to industries and factories in particular being shuttered. There were some other stats that I plucked from the feathered rear of this statistical beast. Would you like me to enlighten you?
Go for it.
Households are consuming about 20% less energy than usual at 7:30 a.m. because instead of people getting up to prepare for a commute, they seem to just be staying in bed longer.
Yep, that's certainly what I do when I got the opportunity. Get out of bed at 8:59.
Is that really? And I bet you're still late to work, aren't you?
Yes, often. No. Well, I mean, the thing is, I'm terrible at taking lunch breaks, so I give myself a little bit of slack in the morning. But yeah, you know, I'm usually online for 9.
Right. You know, I don't even think you're joking. I think you do probably get up about 5 to 9.
No, I do. I'm not joking. Unless I've got the kids coming and they generally rock up about 8. I get up as close to starting work as possible. Why? Okay, why not?
You validated this. Well, I certainly do, because I normally get up about 5:30, whereas now I'm getting up about 6:30.
Yeah, that's really good.
One energy provider told the BBC that it had seen a 7% drop in usage between 9 and 11 p.m., which is, again, according to this provider, suggesting that some people are switching off earlier as well, which is interesting. Ah. So a real excuse for a lie-in or just more sleep in general.
People are bored, basically. They're like, I'm bored, I'll go to sleep.
Could be.
Not me, though, because I don't sleep at all at the moment. Yay!
No, I know. This explains why yesterday you sent me a screenshot of you stroking a cat in a video game.
Yeah. Destiny. Mm.
I'm sure it is.
Now with cats.
Final stat. Two energy providers said that when everything is combined, electricity use is up about 4 or 5%, depending on who you ask. This is for households and where the lines of comparison are drawn. Now, overall, I mean, we've said here that the electricity demand is down nearly 20% because of like massive users of electricity being shut, industries and factories and things like that. I would have expected that to be even lower, but I suspect as well that a lot of offices, their machines are just on, and computers are just being left on, or people didn't shut them down before a lockdown.
I'm not so sure about that. I can't comment. I imagine a lot of people like me are based entirely on laptops these days, so they probably just took them with them. A lot of companies will run some form of their own server infrastructure, so I'm assuming that that will have been left on. And you know, all the things that do routing in the offices, you know, that kind of hardware will all be still operating, even though it's dismally unused. So I can sort of see that as being making sense.
Yeah, I'd be very interested in knowing other people's experiences of this, but I mean, I'm not very green when it comes to my office power consumption. I'm not very green at home, and that's part of the reason why I pay more for like 100% renewably sourced electricity, because I use so much of it. I feel kind of guilty. That's my way of trying to offset it a little bit. But I don't think I'm alone in not being super considerate of the environment in an office environment.
I'm not so bad in the office, because there's very little I can do to make it worse, because I just have a laptop, so I unplug it at the end of the day and take it home with me. At home, I'm an absolute disaster, frankly, and because I've got an old i7 running as a little server that I use occasionally, but it's not doing a huge amount. I've got several NAS drives that are all running all the time. I am an electronic disaster. So yeah.
Well, on the topic, what would you say your favorite least efficient CPU was in history? Because I actually know what mine is.
Really?
Yeah. It was a Pentium 4.
Yeah. I mean, they used to drink something like 400 watts, didn't they?
It was a ridiculous processor.
Yeah. It's gone the other way. It's, you know, GPUs now drink the power and CPUs are much more sippy. But yeah, I suspect it would be one of those later Intel processors. I don't think that i7 I've got is particularly power efficient. I think it's quite a consumer of electrons.
Well, we probably ventured to the equivalent depths of a James Cameron deep sea venture in terms of our nerdiness. But let's just continue it for the sake of a link. If you have a favorite inefficient central processing unit that you remember from your PC days of old, let us know what it is, how much power did it consume, and with what did you replace it? hello@uktechshow.com. We've been following the trend of the Tinfoil Hat Brigade's efforts to link 5G phones to the spread of a biological virus, no names mentioned, and a couple of developments this week I think merited comment, as did Ian. He also thought it merited comment. First, there was a LinkedIn post made by the UK boss of Vodafone, a chap called Nick Jeffrey. He wrote, quote, "It is deeply disappointing to learn that arsonists are still attacking our mobile phone masts. That's 20 so far. One of the sites targeted over the weekend provides mobile connectivity to the Nightingale Hospital in Birmingham. Arsonists, please think about what you are doing and stop. Imagine if it were your mum or dad, your gran or granddad in hospital. Imagine not being able to see or hear them one last time, all because you've swallowed a dangerous lie. There is obviously no link. There is absolutely no link between 5G and coronavirus. There is no science-based evidence 5G is harmful to human health." Now, this provoked quite a few responses, perhaps unsurprisingly, and I'm going to be fair and give some time to one on either side of the debate, but we're going to start with the sensible ones who don't need serious reviews of their own life choices. This one person whose profile says they work for a large telecom equipment maker commented publicly, quote, "I was out today on a capacity increase on a street work site and had verbal abuse that I won't post here regarding 5G and the virus. If they had stopped to listen, I would have explained the site I was on was 2G and 4G, not 5G. But this person said, more to come tomorrow, I expect. Another person later wrote, as an engineer, I've been invited by Orange to some meetings to speak with skeptics. These people are living somewhere between conspiracy theories and Facebook fake news. It's like a religion. You can show all the evidence you like, telling them that you've been working on RF radio frequency for 30 years, that it doesn't make a difference. You want to they just want to show you that you're wrong and evil. I'll stop there because I think this is interesting because it was the first that I'd heard about like engineers in a street doing maintenance work getting abuse.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no excuse for any of this. Like, that behavior is appalling and would be appalling no matter what. And even if there was evidence, it would still be appalling. There are ways of handling things, and this is not that.
So I hope people out doing work on antennas, I hope this was an isolated incident. I suspect it won't be, but I do hope it is, and I hope everyone is able to stay safe doing that work. Finally, the final comment on the Vodafone chief's post I wanted to come to is from someone who says, according to their LinkedIn profile, that they're an expert in strategy, communications, and people, and in the same line says they have an IQ in the 99.99th percentile, which I looked up and equates to an IQ of at least 156. So that's genius, advanced, like high genius level person. Anyway, this person accused Jeffrey of emotional blackmail, which I can sort of see the argument for, talking about put yourself in the shoes of someone whose loved ones are dying, you can't speak to them. But it is far outweighed by significant other levels of bullshit, which is this person argued in these threaded comments with one of the network engineers that they needed to reveal their qualifications if they were to know more about 5G than a doctor. That person replied, "I worked on the technology for Vodafone and understand it better than you do over 20 years. You've managed to promote a conspiracy theory and don't even realize 99th percentile or not." So there's this kind of debate, this back and forth debate, I've always assumed was taking place on the Facebooks, on the Twitters, on the socials, and of course on mainstream broadcast terrestrial television, which we'll come to in a second. But it's gone into the threaded replies of a CEO's comment on a LinkedIn post, and I'm not used to seeing this kind of moaning and bitching and arguing taking place in the post of a LinkedIn thread.
It's absolutely ridiculous is what it is, because these people have absolutely no qualification to talk about any of this stuff. I mean, 99% of them. There might be some who have some element of qualification, and I suppose we should include ourselves in this as well, but I'm very happy to be led by what scientists say about this matter, and they have almost universally said that you know, they understand what the risks are of exposing people to this kind of radio frequency, and nothing is completely safe, obviously, but the risks are understood, and the low powers that we use for mobile communications, there isn't a significant problem.
The final thing I wanted to point out that happened this week is Eamon Holmes was forced to issue a public statement after appearing to promote 5G conspiracy theories on mainstream breakfast television on This Morning. He's now being investigated by the regulator Ofcom for those remarks. Sky wrote that Holmes was criticised for causing, quote, untold damage after he said it was very easy to dismiss the conspiracy theory that claims this link between 5G and coronavirus because it suits the state narrative. Ofcom told Sky that the regulator at the time had over 400 complaints and added that we are assessing this program in full as a priority. Now, the following day, Holmes said, "Every theory relating to such a connection has been proven to be false, and we would like to emphasize that." Now, it's a shame for a man with such nice, soft hands to be using them to fling bullshit around the country, which is a real shame. There's a lot that's going on, and it's really concerning me how much mainstream attention this is getting. And I don't consider us mainstream because we're a tech show where we're asking people to email in about their favorite least efficient processes. So I don't consider us mainstream in that regard. But I think we need to keep on top of this because this has...
We do.
History has shown that these kinds of fears have led to serious repercussions.
Well, they have. And we know the big one being the anti-vax religion movement. Well,
oh, right.
Okay, you know, if you want. But no, the anti-vax movement was spawned from essentially one scientist's incorrectly sort of peer-reviewed thesis that vaccines cause autism. And we now have diseases that were eradicated coming back as a result of it, suffering and people, you know, dying or being very ill and having to live with those repercussions for the rest of their lives. And that was largely one person responsible for creating a worldwide panic. And the same thing is happening again now. I've seen ridiculous and absolutely xenophobic and racist comments about, you know, the virus's origin and 5G's origin, if you will, being similar. These things are... It pains me. It pains me on every level. It pains me because it's inaccurate and unscientific, and it pains me because it's just another symptom of of people wanting to other people who are not the same as them, even though we are all the same. They're all stupid bags of meat. My concerns are, and always will be, about the spread of false information, and this is absolutely that. Like, I don't mind having a conversation about the safety of 5G. I don't mind if people have, if there are scientific papers written that question things and they are good science. All we can ever do, this is why this debate causes so many problems, because we can never ever say definitively in science things are true. That's not how science works. You know, that there are 99% of global scientists agree that man-made climate change is a thing. There are some who do not. And science can't say, well, you're wrong, because that's not how it works. Like, we have a theory, and that's about as good as it gets. Sometimes we can prove things. But these people aren't playing by the rules. They're going on social media and they're making something up. Some of them are doing it maliciously. Some are believing it because they think there's enough credible link to it. And those are the people we need to protect. You know, I don't want to be mean or unpleasant to those people, but they aren't necessarily, they're not interested in thinking about it critically. That they just see something and they think, well, that seems credible to me. I think, you know, we don't know enough about this, and science can't be robust in that way and say, actually, yes, we do. We know for sure there are no dangers in related to this. So I'm happy to have a debate with someone who thinks something. And there are reports that suggest that there is damage done to things, rats mostly, by 5G. And some of those papers have been discredited as well, because I had a look into it. I'm happy to have a conversation, but what I'm not happy to see is this nonsense on social media where people can just go on and make anything they want up, reclaim links to this, that and the other, and then just scream mainstream media at you at the end. It's you can't argue with it, and that's why it doesn't deserve any decent sort of attention paid to it.
Well, if you have a counterpoint, obviously we welcome them all. Do send them in, hello@uktechshow.com. Nothing says a day well spent than the encouragement of a balanced debate.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UK Tech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
We had some great feedback that came in over the last week, but we've run a bit long this week, so hopefully we'll get to that next week. But thank you to everyone who has been emailing us. Thank you also to Tom Merritt, who keeps us in supply of our global view on the week's technology events. Here he is explaining what's been happening this week.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, we discussed some of the free places to get TV shows and talked about why all this increased video viewing is not leading to increased revenue for video creators. We also kicked around a few of the great ways to take a break from reality, including Animal Crossing and virtual reality, looked at why Twitter is not always toxic and in fact has helped oncologists with the challenge of fighting cancer during a pandemic, and looked ahead to how the workplace will change when folks are allowed to head back into the office. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Thank you, Tom. And yeah, do check out Daily Tech News Show for all of your tech needs, except for the ones you come to us for. Ian, I think that's about it, isn't it? Other than to thank our patrons, who are brilliant and beautiful and amazing and smell great, I'm sure. And I'm sure also taste fairly good on some days. So thank you, patreon.com/UK Tech.
Not at all you weird. Can get...
No, not at all, is it? Well, you know, I have never tasted any of our patrons, I'll be honest. It's never come up.
I think that's probably a good thing, and I'm glad you admitted it. Oh, the file count's finished. 85,517, 4,609 folders, 1.13 terabytes, and that's just the photos.
And the reason that's relevant, by the way, people, is that on the Patreon version of the show this week, our extended version, we talked about digital hoarding and the processes that we use for hoarding our things and what other people seem to be using. So that's on the Patreon version right now, patreon.com/UK Tech. Ian, I'm off. Toodlepip.
Au revoir.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.